Welcome to the Midday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and let's see. Woodrow Wilson is in the White House. Women have just gotten the right to vote. Prohibition has just begun, and my guest takes his first piano lesson. What year would that be? Frank Glaser, welcome.
Oh, thank you. It must have been 1918, during the war.
Right around?
Right near the end of the war.
And you're taking piano lessons.
Well, 19... I began to learn by playing not only My Country 'Tis of Thee, but It's a Long, Long Road to Tipperary.
Oh, well, that dates it, doesn't
that
it?
That was the fashion of the day.
Sure.
Fashionable song.
Now, was that in Chester, Wisconsin?
No, that was in Fond du Lac.
Okay.
I was born in the township of Chester, but after a year or two, my family moved to another farm, and then by the time I was three, we moved to Fond du Lac. And there, I touched the piano for the first time. I've never been back to play. If I were to go back, it would be after 93 years of first ever touching a piano.
Well, we have to get you to go back to Fond du Lac and play A Long Way to Tipperary. that would be full cycle. But you have had some of these remarkable, let's say, kind of coming back around situations where you've played a concert 70 years after the first time you played it, you played a program?
Oh, I did, yeah. Well, even I did the 80th anniversary in the junior high school, 80th anniversary of my playing the Mendelssohn G minor concerto with the school orchestra. And that was 1929. And 80 years later at Bates College, I played it again. And then 70 years after my town hall debut, I replicated the same program that I had done then. And 60 years after my Carnegie Hall debut, I did that program again. So I've had a few of these opportunities to play. And another thing that happened was that the first concert pianist I ever heard was Paderewski when I was 11 years old.
Goodness.
And I kept the program. Because I was excited to have it. And many years later, I played that whole program that I heard him play when I was 11 years old. And he was the first concert pianist that I had heard play, actually.
I think he probably influenced more pianists and even composers than we realize.
Paderewski?
Yes, I know of other stories of pianists and composers who attended a Paderewski concert and just that really turned them into a musician.
Oh, yes. He was most famous for his so-called cantabile, the singing tone. He was not known as much for his technique, though he had all he needed to do what he had to do, of course.
Now you're playing, let's see, is it tonight at Farley's House of Pianos in Madison?
Yes, tonight at 7:30. And I must say, it's a piano wonderland. It's really unbelievable. I think it's unique in my experience when playing all over the world, because he has so many pianos beautifully restored, and I'm playing on one that's a centennial piano, in that it was built around 1876, 100 years after the founding of our country, and even to this day, it just sounds beautiful because it's been given a lot of TLC and expert technical knowledge of how to do it. So it's a wonderful experience for me to do, actually.
Well, let's hear a little bit of you and one of your more recent recordings. Actually, you made this recording just like last year at Bates. Are you artist in residence at Bates?
Yes, in my 32nd year.
And in fact, they gave you an honorary doctorate.
They did, yes, in May.
This year.
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, this is the final movement of the Schubert Sonata in A minor from that concert last year, with the pianist being my guest today, Frank Glaser.
Thank you.
The pianist Frank Glaser, in performance last year at Bates College, where he's artist in residence. And that was the final movement. He played the whole thing for that occasion, but we just heard the final movement of the Schubert Sonata in A minor, and we'll have more with Frank Glaser and his music, and in a 15 minutes, the 12:30 quiz question, all of that yet to come during the midday here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Back now with pianist Frank Glaser, who has been performing for, let's see, when was your first public performance, Frank? I'm sure you remember.
Public performance was when I was 12 years old, 1927, in a vaudeville context. And it was with a piano trio, but we played so-called classical music, like Joachim's Arrangement, Brahms' Fifth Hungarian Dance, Cary Jacobs' Bond, A Perfect Day. I accompanied the violinist in Troy Moroy, and I had to play a piano solo also. I don't know why. It was a Polish dance in E flat minor by Czarwenka. But my actual first performance in concert happened when I was 21. I had performed a lot in junior high school, senior high school, but I never played a full recital program ever until I played in Town Hall.
That would be very unusual today, wouldn't it?
It was quite nerve-wracking, not knowing what it would feel like to walk out in New York with seven critics there. And they didn't know that I had never played in a whole recital program. I did play one program only in a friend's home, and that was printed, and that's how I knew what it was. That was when I was 19. But I made my debut officially when I was 21.
You had been studying by that time, though. You'd been studying in Germany, in Berlin, right?
Yeah, in Berlin and in Italy with Arthur Schnabel.
The great pianist, right?
Yes.
And you did some work with Schoenberg, too, along the way.
And with Schoenberg also in Boston when he came. I saw Schoenberg in Berlin, but I couldn't study with him then because he was asking as much as Schnabel did for a lesson.
Uh-huh.
And
could only afford one of them.
My sponsors didn't know I was interested in composition, and they were willing to pay for the piano, but not the compositional end of it.
But you were in Berlin in 1933, that very formative year.
32 and 33, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When Hitler came into power.
Yes.
That's why Schnabel left and went to Lake Como, and I followed him there, and then went back to him again. And I last played for him in New York before my Carnegie Hall debut, which was in 1949. And I played for him on a Friday night. I came back on Monday to play the big Schubert C minor sonata, and his wife greeted me and told me that the night after I had played, that night he had a heart attack. It was his first one.
Uh-huh.
And so he couldn't hear me anymore in the Schubert. So then I played for Felix Salmond, who was a great and much feared coach at Juilliard and at Curtis simultaneously. I met him at a party after Leonard Rose gave a concert, and Leonard, who studied with Felix Salmond, introduced me to him. So I played the rest of my Carnegie Hall program for him.
Was your career at all interrupted by World War II? So many musical careers were interrupted by World War II. Was that your experience?
Oh, yes, mine also, yes. Oh, yeah, I served in the European theater for 22 months as an investigator, interpreter. But the interpretation had to be in French, and I was supposed to go to North Africa because I spoke German and Italian, but no French. But if once you're down as an interpreter, you jolly well interpret, whether you know the language or not.
Which language.
And I had to interpret for two British officers who were liaison to us. And we came to a town where the Germans, in retreating, had burnt the local church, and the mayor was furious. But I still had to be able to tell my British captain what this man needed for his village in the way of food, equipment of all sorts, gas and all that. And so he spoke so fast to me, I didn't know what he was talking about. Well, I couldn't relay that to the British captain, so I had to ask him to speak slowly, and I figured it out. But it was tough going at first.
Well, this would be tough going for some pianists. I think it's a pretty action-packed capriccio by Brahms, from his set of fantasies, Opus 116, and our pianist, as has been the case for this hour, Frank Glaser. the last piano pieces by Brahms, a Capriccio from a collection of fantasies, and you played that for Arthur Schnabel, you say?
Yes, I had a lesson on it, all seven of the pieces, and that was the last time I ever played for him, because he had a heart attack that night after I left.
And so what did he say about your playing for him, this piece?
Well, in a way, it was almost like in a philosophic sense or whatever, he said in a very quiet way, you will have success at Carnegie Hall. It was my debut concert there, you see. So he was very encouraging.
And he was right. You did some experiment with binaural sound, which I gather was, I wouldn't call it a trend exactly, but it was a phenomenon of about 50, 60 years ago. How did that work?
Actually, 59 years ago. It was a special invention by Emery Cook, who was an engineer, and he wanted to get a binaural sound, he called it, sort of equivalent of stereophonic. But his equipment required an extra arm you had to add to your record player. It was in the shape of a Y with two needles, one on each end of the Y, and one needle went around the outside of the record toward the center, and the other started in the middle at the same time and went to the end. And the outer one had the high frequencies, uh-huh. The middle one the low frequencies. So I couldn't play it on my equipment because I didn't have the equipment for it. It cost $35 at the time, and people, I guess, couldn't afford it. They didn't want to spend the money because it was a lot more then than it is now. In any case, you could play either the highs or the lows and hear the music, but you didn't get the combination. Well, I didn't know whatever happened to the recording when one day the archivist at Bates College, who heard it at my home, said, Emery Cook, I think he gave all his inventions to the Smithsonian Institution, and if he did, then they must have the tape you made of these six Paganini Liszt recording, which he was going to issue. And it turned out they had it, and it was 59 years after I recorded it.
But you got to hear it again.
59 years after I recorded it, it came out. And they just put it out, and they were excited to put it out, but they couldn't because they didn't have a cover for it, a jacket. I said, I've got two of them that Emery gave me when he made the recording, and I had them big covers on vinyl, 33 or 3rd record. But they reduced it for the CD,
sure.
Of course. And so that enabled them to put it out. Mind you, 59 years. But what's remarkable is the sound is, even in present-day standards, is absolutely unbelievable, the sound he got. But unfortunately, he never succeeded in a commercial way.
And this, you sort of have to fasten your seatbelt for this particular performance.
Yeah, you have to really.
We'll hear La Campanella.
La Campanella, yeah.
A phenomenal performance, whether in binaural or stereo or mono, for that matter. Quite the romp through La Campanella, the work of Franz Liszt, inspired by Paganini. And Frank Glaser was the pianist for that. He'll be playing tonight at 7:30 at Farley's House of Pianos, playing Bach and Mozart and Beethoven and Chopin and some Liszt, but not that particular piece.
No. Hungarian Rhapsody, number 12.
Which is no pushover either.
And Orlach de Wallenstadt and O Bordjin Sewers.
Some very evocative pieces by Liszt. Always a pleasure to have you here, Frank.
Thank you, and, Norman. It's great to be here.
Safe travels back to Maine, back to Bates, where you're
Thank you so much.
Artist in residence. Mm-hmm.